First, I want to thank the committee for inviting me to this convention. Seen a lot of people that I haven't seen in years. And it's just a pleasure to be among the people that taught me that I come in here and I get it and I take it and give it to somebody else. A miracle. Girl named June gave me something in high school. I gave it to a girl named Sarah, and we ain't spoke to each other in 40 years. Glad to be here. I'm Bill Butts, and I'm a retired alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Do something for me. Turn to that person next to you and tell them I love you. Come on. Now, if the person that was sitting next to you happened to be the same sex as you are, don't worry. Be happy. We're going to talk about recovery tonight. You have them other problems on your own. Let me lay this one on you. I got to tell you. These are my favorite drunk jokes. Drunk came home and accused his wife of having a man in the house. She said, honey, I ain't got no man in the house. He said, yes, you do. I know where he is. He in the bathroom. He ran in the bathroom. He said, no, he ain't in there. He said, I know where now. He up under the bed. Looked up under the bed, say, he ain't in there neither. He said, ha, ha, ha. Where would a woman hide a man? In the closet. Uh-huh. Walked in the closet, pulled the clothes back. Guy standing there with a 357 magnet. The drunk closed the door and said, he ain't in there neither. People say we suffer from insanity. No. Drunk's got plenty of sense. I walked in there today and I saw all of these people in green. You people shouldn't do that. Can you imagine what a newcomer would think, a drunk stagging up them steps and see you all in all that green? Oh my God, what is this? They can't be St. Patrick's Day and home Palmer ain't in town. What's going on? But I'm glad to be here. We sick, ain't we, Jimmy? Let me get right into it. When did it start? I took my first drink at an early age. And the impact of that drink, I thought for sure I'd found a friend when I took that drink. When it went down, it made me feel like I had the strength of Paul Anderson, the wisdom of Albert Einstein. Later on, it made me a bigger fool than Evel Knievel. But I thought for sure, this is what I need to live for the rest of my life. And I never dreamed, Jimmy. I never dreamed that one day alcohol was going to stop doing for me and start doing to me. I found a friend. Results of that, I got kicked out of 3 high schools right there in the city of Atlanta because of my alcohol behavior. But I need to back up and tell you why I got kicked out of these high schools and why I wasn't supposed to get kicked out of these high schools. The first school I went to, elementary school, my mother put me into this private school so I wouldn't grow up to be the type person that I was. I wasn't supposed to be an alcoholic. I am not supposed to be here telling you my name is Bill Butts and I'm an alcoholic. I'm supposed to tell you that my name is Bill Butts and I'm an astronaut. The private school my mother put me in, one of my classmates was the mayor of Atlanta, Georgia, Maynard Jackson. Every time I see him, I ask him, where'd you go wrong? Can you imagine getting kicked out of 3 high schools? Not because you had failing grades, because you were drunk and you were a fool. One day my mother came in. She always had a plan to make sure I be somebody. This was her major plan. I know what I do. I send you up to Chicago, Illinois, let you live with Aunt Mary. Maybe she can convince you to finish high school. Big smile I got on my face. I'm going to Chicago. Chicago got more liquor stores than they got people. Two things Chicago got, liquor stores and churches, and some of them in the same building. So off I went to Chicago to live with Aunt Mary, the same woman that gave me my first cigarette when I was 8 years old. I loved Aunt Mary to death. That was the same woman that let me hang out on the street lights after I became a member of the Black Lord gang, and she let me hang out on the street lights at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. I loved that woman. My mother used to send me to Elyria, Ohio, every now and then to live with Aunt Mamie. Aunt Mamie wouldn't let me drink, wouldn't let me smoke, made me come in the house when the sun went down. I hated her damn guts. I got to the point where I hate anybody but Lisa. Something was going on wrong in my life, but what is it? Yeah, I drink a little bit and I act a fool every time I drink. But it's going to change. And you know who's going to change it? You must don't know who this is. This is Bill Butt. And I'm going to change it. But I drink a little bit more. What do you do? I'm at the point in my life now where all I know is I drink this stuff and I get sick. I wake up next morning, I'm sick. And I got to go back and get the same stuff that made me sick so I can get sick again. Ain't that sick? But what do? I've never heard of a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous, so you just keep on doing what you're doing. And you keep saying to yourself, tomorrow it's going to be different. And it always was. It got worse. It didn't get any better until I got affiliated with you brainwashers. And you brainwashed me into coming in this fellowship, doing what I was told, and I'll get sober and start living a beautiful life. And it's beautiful. Somebody asked me, he said, Bill, how things going for you? I said, I'm doing so good. Rev Mike wrote me and asked me for one of my prayer clothes. It can't get no better. I finished Marshall High in Chicago, Illinois, and I came back to Atlanta and I created another disease. It's called idolism. Let me explain that. Idolism is when you stand on the corner with some more drunks and you talk about things like how many square feet in a 747 airplane? Who gives a doggone? Or you talk about religion. Something about when Abel got stuck with a cane or something like that. Or you talk about politics. I remember Frank saying, yeah, Nixon wasn't no good when he was the governor of Tennessee. I knew that. He's bone Chattanooga. That's what we've done. That's idolism. You stand on the corner with some drunks and you talk about things that you don't know. Here's Mom again. Come here. Come here, my son. Sit down. Now you finish high school, that ain't the end of it. You are going to college. You all ever notice I have talked quite a bit about my mother and haven't said anything about my father? There's a reason. I'm going to tell you this one thing about my father, and you will never hear nothing else about it. He told me once, if I had known that you was going to grow up to be the way that you are, when your mother was pregnant, I would have made her swallow a brick and bust your brains out. That's the last you will hear about my father. And I mean that. Mom told me, say, now you're going to college. I said, Mom, everybody down there at the college. I said, look at all these cars they got here. You got Mars Brown, Spelman, all these things. Everybody over there got a car. She said, I tell you what, if you go to school, I'll buy you a brand new car to drive down there. Okay, Mom, I'm going to school. She took me down to Boomshine Motor. She bought me a solid white convertible Bonneville Pontiac. Off I went down to Tallahassee, Florida, to enroll in Florida A&M University to get an education. A drunk with a brand new car going to get educated. I was parked on the main strip of that campus one day, and I looked two blocks down the street and saw the prettiest woman I ever seen in my whole entire life. Turned the key on that big Bonneville with the top down in the winter. Pulled up next to her and I said the word. There's one word that we men use. There's something about that word that's just electrifying. One word we can say to a woman, I just don't know, Jimmy, what it does to me. One word. You see, it's still working. The next word that flew out of my mouth was, what's your name? She said, my name is Billy Cheeks. I said, well, get in the car. Your name's Cheeks. My name's Butt. Let me tell you about Florida A&M University. That school refused to tolerate drunks. I was guilty. They refuse to tolerate people that don't go to classes. They refuse to tolerate arrogant, bully people. And there I was being kicked out of school number 4. This was the first inventory that I took. Bill, something is wrong. But it ain't you. You all were in that inventory, every one of you. My mother was in that inventory. Sister was in that inventory. My neighbors, school teachers. Everybody was in there except me. You leave me alone. That's all I ask you to do. Leave me alone. I'll straighten this thing out. Whatever this problem is, I'll straighten it out. Results of that inventory, I said to myself, maybe if I go into the United States Army, I need to be where somebody can discipline me. Somebody take me over and tell me when to get up, when to go to bed, when to walk, when to dress, when to undress, when to eat. Just take over my whole entire life. This got to be the answer. That was my first geographical change. When they took me from Atlanta, took me up to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, they made one mistake. They took me. They took me and this. First night, Fort Jackson, South Carolina, I got locked up by the EPs, MPs for being drunk and disorderly in the PX. First night. Let me see. And the next night. And the next night. Well, I'm excited. Maybe we can make a telephone install out of it. So they sent me right here to Augusta, Georgia, Fort Gordon. What a town. This town has grown, too, from the last time I was here. Last time I was here, you all had two main streets in this whole town. Gwinnett and 9th. You all made a bunch of changes. Where'd you all get that river from over there? It wasn't here. came down here to Fort Gordon, Georgia, where I stayed AWOL every doggone chance I got. Because I had to get back over to Tallahassee, Florida to catch up with Miss Billy Cheeks. I was in love, y'all. Which if you are drunken and you're in love, it ain't nothing but a misunderstanding between two fools. But I was in love. Come here, you mind? One day I was sitting in the mess hall, right here at Fort Gordon, Georgia. When a sergeant walks up to me and he said, Bill, you know what? You are the luckiest soldier I ever seen in my whole entire life. I said, Sarge, what are you talking about? He said, I saw your orders this morning, and you are going to the most beautiful post in the United States. It's called Presidio, and it sits right in the heart of San Francisco, California. Oh, my goodness, 2,800 miles away from everybody. Here I go, to California, the Golden Gate Bridge, those cable cars and all those hills of Pacific Ocean, San Francisco, California. What a town. But there's a little section of San Francisco. Matter of fact, there's two. One is Hyde Asbury Park area, and then there's another section called North Beach that I fell in love with. And let me tell you why I fell in love with those areas. The people there, some walk around with long gowns on, with big flowers printed on the front, with peace rope across the back, and they wore these little bitty sunglasses, long hat, and went barefoot and didn't bathe. And I like what they call themselves, beatniks. Oh boy, all my life I've been struggling trying to be a part of a certain group. And now I can become a drunk soldier in the daytime and a beatnik at night. When got my long robe and my beads and my little bitty sunglasses and my sandals, I never forget one night we went up there to North Beach, and you all picture this now. It was a group of people in a circle, and they were popping their fingers and singing. Right in the middle, here was a guy plucking a big bass fiddle, but it had no strings on it. Well, I stood there, and I wasn't going to look like no fool. I just popped my face. I couldn't hear nothing he was playing, but go along with the bass. A couple of nights later, I found out why I couldn't hear him playing. I was standing there when one of the beatniks was up in the alley, and he said, and I turned around and said, you talking to me? He said, yeah, come here. And I walked over, and he was standing there holding this little bitty white cigarette. One of them pocket rockets. And he handed it to me, and he lit it, and I puffed it, and he said, don't puff it. He said, suck the smoke in and hold it. And I held it. And I held it. That was the night I learned a new word. Ear. And I held it. And I noticed that the cars begin to slow down. And people begin to talk in tongues. And hello, the world got beautiful. And the first thing popped into my mind, I don't have to drink that stinking stuff no more. All I got to do is smoke dope. I know this is a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I put this dope story in my story to make a point. I found out that switching from alcohol to drugs was just like changing seats on the Titanic. That whole ship went down, not part of it. One night the beatniks took me they took me to a coffee shop. They introduced me to some well-dressed people wearing shark skin suits, Balsalina hat with Johnson Murphy shoes, big diamond rings, Rolex watches. And they told me how I could be a part of a black market ring that was selling drugs to the soldiers that was coming back from the Far East. Well, at that time I was making $108 per month take home pay from the Army. I always owed it out to some bootlegger or some dope man. Plus, when he asked me, did I want to be a part of this ring selling drugs, this went to work. And the first thing flew out of my mouth was, when do you want me to start? Well, for about 3 months, the name of Bill Butts rung out around the Oakland Terminal and down in the Fillmore District. Because Bill Butts was a dope pusher. Maybe somebody be sitting there saying, why only 3 months? I'll tell you why, because there ain't but one thing to drunk and do right. Let's get drunk. He can't sell no dope. You use that, but the rest you sell to the police. You don't care who come up with some dope. Police come up with a uniform. You got a dope cell? Yeah, yeah. Can't do nothing right but get drunk. San Francisco detectives locked me up, kept me in there. Jail for a couple of days, and then the MPs from Presidio came, picked me up, took me out to the U.S. Army stockade, and they kept me there for about 3 months until they had my general court-martial. This ain't no slap on the back of the hand. Bill Butts, you always wanted to be big time. You big time now, buddy. You are it. At my court-martial, this major stood up. And he said, Bill Butts, you are a disgrace to the United States Army. And you are now dishonorably discharged. And you're to serve time at the USDB, which stands for United States Disciplinary Barracks, Leavenworth, Kansas. Never forget that cold January the 15th day when we rolled into that prison. I looked up and I said to myself, why me? I'm 19 years old. Why me? Acceptance. I always had a problem with it. I'm not supposed to do this. I got a good mother. I come from a good background. Why me? It marches into this huge prison right at lunchtime. It marches into the big cafeteria there. Looked like it was 1,000 men in there. And I sat down next to a guy seemed to be twice my age. And I leaned over to him and asked him what his name was. And he said, my name is Ace and I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. I told him my name was Bill Butts and I was from Atlanta. My next question to him was, how much more time you got? He said, I'm short time and now. I ain't got for 17 more years. I said, oh my God. At Leavenworth, if you desire, you can take up a trade. You can go to school. They even got a big band room in there. You can sing or want to learn how to play an instrument. If you all want to play an instrument, you want to learn or want to play in a little band or whatever, sign up. Well, when I was in high school, you sang one of those little doo-wop groups. We always wanted a guitar player. Never could find nobody to play a guitar. So I said, I know what I'm going to do. While I'm here, I'm going to learn how to play a guitar. See, when I was out on the street, never could find time to learn how to play a guitar. I got time now. I said to myself, fool, when you leave here, you can teach Chet Atkins two or three things about a guitar. So I signed up learning how to play a guitar. Then I signed up for some college classes, and the rest of my time was spent writing Miss Billy Cheeks. One day I went to mail call and opened up this letter. Down at the bottom, she must have went and got one of those black markers and wrote at the bottom, "Surprise! I will meet you in Kansas City, Missouri on your release date. Love, Billy." I need to tell you that the whole time I was at Leavenworth, even though there was just as much drugs on the inside of the wall as was on the outside, just as much alcohol on the inside of the wall as it was on the outside, I didn't touch not one drop of nothing. However, that was one problem. You see, when you quit drinking, you leave this hole in your life, and you got to fill it up with something. Now, if you had been there, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, if it had been at Leavenworth, I could have filled it up with spirituality. They didn't have an AA program there. They got one now. I spoke there 3 years ago. So, if you don't fill up this hole with spirituality from this program, you're going to fill it up with the same garbage that you just throwed out of it. Just a matter of time. Let me show you the result. Let me show you the proof. I wrote back to her. When you get to Kansas City, Missouri, bring me 1/2 gallon of Old Taylor 100 proof. Love, Bill. That little train ran those 31 miles from Leavenworth into Kansas City, Missouri. And I got there and I got off the train, looked up the top of the steps, and there she stood with a big brown paper sack. Up them steps I went, grinning. My God, I was grinning so much I looked like a piano with lips. Up them steps, and I had to get the woman up them steps to get the bag. That bag has come first in my life. For so long, I remember the time that brown paper sack was even my God. It was my job. It was my school. It was my help. It was my God. That brown paper sack. Eleven days after my release, she became Mrs. Bill Butts. I came back to Atlanta. She went to the Middle East. That's Detroit. I came back to Atlanta to do what a normal husband's supposed to do. He's supposed to get a job, get a little apartment, two or three pieces of furniture, then you send for your bride. I'm a drunk. We don't do things like that. She finally paid her way to Atlanta. She came here, got a job. She got the apartment, whatever. Bill Butts was back up on the corner with his playmates and playgrounds, still trying to figure out how many feet in a 747. Then the children start coming. I hope I'm getting ready to mess up some parents drinking. Or either I hope I'm getting ready to keep some parents sober. When my son Sanchez was born, looked like I would have had sense enough to say, This child gonna need somebody to teach him how to tie up his shoes, or shoot marbles, or fly a kite, or ride a bicycle. Then the twins came along, Michael and Michelle. I just couldn't be a husband. And from gut level, how bad did I want to be a father? But every time my flesh and blood would say, come here, Bill, in that brown paper sack, say, here I am over here, Bill. Come here, and that's the way I went. And it hurts. It hurts now. Those kids are adults, and they got little bitty kids of their own. And it still hurts. My kids live in Detroit. And I get to go up to Detroit 3 and 4 times a year, and sure, they're meeting at the airport, and they throw their arms around me, but I can feel that block wall. It's not like the Berlin Wall where you can take a hammer and tear it down. That wall, I put it there, and there ain't nothing I can do to tear it down. It hurts. I hope I just messed up some parents drinking. It hurts. She packed up those kids. And as she was getting on the train, she said, Bill, next time I come back to Atlanta, it's going to be at your funeral. You can't last long like this, Bill, but you can't last long. Wasn't that for me to do, go back to my old playmates and playground? That's the only place I know. This is my survival area. Go back and panhandle. And I needed them corn peepees to drop my hand. God knows I did. I was sort of like the drunk standing over a commode, counting his wine money, and he accidentally dropped a dime of it in the commode. He looked down at the dime, he said, now I'm a drunk, I'm a bum, I ain't no good, but I'll be doggone if I'm going to stoop low enough to stick my hand down in that commode and pick up a dime. He thumped the quarter in. He said, I guess I'll do it for 35 cents. About 2 years passed by. After she packed up those kids and went to Detroit, I jumped on the phone, I called her, I said, honey babe, what do you think about me coming up to Detroit? She said, Bill, sounds good. I said, I really miss you and the kids. Said, we miss you too. A lot of jobs here, Bill. Bet if you get here Monday, bet you go to work Tuesday. I said, are you telling me I can come to Detroit? Yeah. You leave your drinking in Atlanta? Somehow, I cut it off. Keep in mind, I cut it off. But I still don't know anything about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I still got this old people. Got this drawer just like she told me. Good job. Blast furnace operator, Ford Motors. Within 10 months, I made a down payment on a new house. Made a down payment on a new car. Became coach of Little League softball team, and I used to feel like I was 20 foot tall when I put in my driveway, and those kids say, hey, Mr. Bill, get your gloves, come on down. I was somebody. But I got this hole, y'all. I got to fill it up. And I fill it up at a barbecue on the 4th of July when somebody said, Bill, you don't even look like no alcoholic. Won't you do like I do, Bill? See, I've been holding this liquor all day. Somebody else said, Bill, you should do like I do. Don't drink that red liquor. Get vodka like I'm drinking.
Somebody else said, Bill, get you a king-size bed.
Pull half of it out. Do like I do.
Bill, why don't you get you some brown paper and chew it up first before you drink? Had me eating up Kroger. All these suggestions. And one stuck.
Just to get these bums off my back, I'm going to drink one beer. That's all I'm going to drink, one beer. Just to stop them from bugging me.
And as Paul Harvey says, you know the rest of the story.
As a result of that one can of beer, what followed? I lost that marvelous job at Ford Motors. I lost my automobile. The wife was able to hold on to the house after she got two full-time jobs. One day she didn't go to a second job. She had to come on and give me a message. She walked in and said, wake up, bum! Have you ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous? What came out of my mouth was, hell no. Leroy, the next thing that came out of her mouth was, you will tonight. She said, my co-worker's in that program. He told me they're having a meeting tonight right down there at the corner of Joy Road and Schaefer. And I want you down there tonight at 8 o'clock. If you don't go to that meeting, I want you to get out of my house. You women can say that's so nasty. And you always wait till somebody else is around when you say it. Well, that night, about 10 minutes after 8, I went down there, and I walked in, and there you all were. You're a bunch of wimps. I knew something was wrong with y'all. Y'all had them short last names. As soon as I walked in, a guy standing right beside the door, he's about 2 inches taller than I am. He threw his arms open and he said, come on in, I love you. You know, the neck of the woods I come from, when a man tell you he love you, he got off. Problem. Well, I went on in and I sat down some. And one of you tuckers got up and read something they call Hide Works, and another wimp got up and read something about some traditions or something and some promises and all that mess. The point is, getting sober just like Delta Airlines is ready when you are. And I wasn't ready. I was ready for one thing. Get the hell out of there, get 2 blocks up Joy Road, that liquor store. Only thing was on my mind. Heck with y'all. I knew not one of you in there had ever lost a job. You all look too doggone good. You all look like Evening in Paris. I look like one night in Beirut. Wife kept a promise. Put my saw behind out in the snow. Back to Atlanta to my mama. Walk up and down the street. Panhandling. Drinking wine. Any of you ever been out of town and you come back broke and you try to impress your friends that you done all right where you been? Walked in Miss Tucker's wine store and told her that I came to get some wine for a friend of mine that was having a dinner party. And when you walk into the wine store, at the front of the store, the expensive wines are stored there. And the further down the row you get, the cheaper the wine gets. And she said, well, what was the name of the wine they sent you at? And I say, oh, I can't remember. All I know, it was sort of a dinner type wine. So she reached up, she grabbed the bottle, she said, was it Que les pantons? No. She get another bottle, what is it, Que les squirrels? No. And she moved on down, and she got to one bottle, she picked it up, she said, was it MD-2020? I said, that sounds like it. One morning I came out of Miss Tucker's wine store like I've done so many mornings. Got my bottle of wine, went behind Stella Brothers' funeral home, and I twisted the cap off of it. Thumped it over behind one of those amulets. Turned that bottle up and stuck my hands out. And they were trembling. The insanity said, Bill, you's having a bad morning. We'll get you an old bottle, you'll be all right. I went in Mr. Tucker's wine store for the second time, and I was drunk standing there. He died about 4 months ago. His name was Steve, and he said, Bill, you ever heard of this place called Fulton County Alcoholic Treatment Center? I said, no, Steve, what about it? He said, they tell me they're taking drunks in over there free. They're getting them sober. I came on out of Mr. Tucker's wine store and went drunk bottle number two, and much to my surprise when I came out, the alley, my mother was parked there. She rolled down the window. She said, you ready to go home? I said, no, Mom. How about taking over to 265 Boulevard? Fulton County Alcoholic Treatment Center. I'm going to try to get myself sober. I can hear now. Thank God. Took me over there at that time. The only length of time you could stay at a detox center was 5 days. You didn't make it 5 days. That was it. It wasn't like what you got now, where you can stay 10 days, 16 days, 28 days, 17 years. Some of these places you just run in there, get detoxed, go out, get drunk, go to AA, pick up a white chip. Detox, white chip. Detox, white chip. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's all right to pick up white chips. But keep this in mind. Picking up white chips is just like gonorrhea. It ain't nothing to be ashamed of, but you ain't supposed to just keep on getting it. Stayed my 5 days, and as I was going out, my counselor said, Bill, you know where you're supposed to be tonight at 8 o'clock, don't you? I said, yeah. Hey, meeting right. I went back over there that night because I didn't have nowhere else to go. Picked up a white chip that night. And for 11 months, I was the loudest thing in that building. You could hear me from here to Newark. I'm Bill Bucks, I'm an alcoholic. I can take this red thing in my mouth and make it say anything. In other words, you admit from the lips, you got to accept from the heart, gut level, way down in there. Heck with being in AA. For those 11 months, I'd rather be around it. Let me explain being around it. Somebody said, Bill, you need a sponsor. Not me. I don't need no old fool telling me how to live. Bill, won't you buy a big book? Because it ain't got no jokes or pictures in it. Bill, won't you go on a 12-step call? I got mine. Let him get his. End of that 11-month period,
I called Bernard Carter. Bernard, I'm getting ready to have a birthday. How about speaking for me? Got a bunch of people ready to participate in my first birthday. Then a thought popped in my mind. Won't you go up to Detroit and show that stupid woman up there what she is divorced? You look like a bum last time you saw her. Go up there and show her. Jumped on the back of a Greyhound bus, and the bus sitting there waiting for the driver to get on, and a little bitty fella got on the bus. About that tall. His name is Stinkin' Thinkin'. Cute little fella. Got on, sat right next to me. And Jimmy, he hunched me. He said, you know what, Bill? You haven't took a drink of liquor in 11 months. Don't you feel good? Yeah. You ever thought? That's all you needed. Just stay open for a while. Now you can drink like people. Remember your brother-in-law in Detroit? How you used to take a drink? He said, Bo, let me buy you another drink. He said, no, I got enough. Got to go to work in the morning. You can do that now, Bill. Looked down at him and said, yeah, you might be right. Jumped off the bus, went and got a half pint of liquor. Set them up in a cup. And programmed it in my mind that this one half a pint was going to last me 731 miles. The distance from Atlanta, Georgia to Detroit, Michigan. I was out looking in Chattanooga. That ain't but 119 miles. I found a pint of liquor from a man loading a bus in Lexington, Kentucky. When I got to Detroit, that woman saw exactly what she had missed. Nothing. They chipped in, bought me a one-way ticket back to Atlanta. Here comes the good part. Here comes the good part. During those 11 months, I didn't listen to nothing you all tried to tell me. And that's the key to getting sober. Following directions from people that's been there. But I was too brilliant. The way that you got to get sober, first of all, you got to be de-hipped in order to get sober. But it's one thing I did remember that you all talked about. You talked about a God. You talked about a higher power that was greater than me. So me and this higher power had one of the biggest arguments you ever want to hear on the back of a Greyhound bus. I reminded him, in case he had forgot, that he delivered Daniel from the lion's den. He gave sight to the blind. I told him, in case he had forgot. And I told him this. I don't care if you're in me, if you're on this bus, or if you're the one that I used to sing about in Sunday school, if you're the one that my mother taught me about, wherever you are, I told him, I am sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of living like a dog. I'm sick and tired of paying this high price for this low living. I'm tired. And I meant it not from here. I meant it from gut level. Then something else popped in my mind. Bill, this ain't the first time that you prayed to God to stop you from drinking. But what'd you do? As soon as you got up off your knees, you went straight to the liquor store. Maybe you need to do something different. Maybe if you take a first step, maybe he might kick in and do the rest. What do you think, huh? Help yourself first. He gave you that ability. When the bus got into Atlanta, instead of me going home like the other passengers, I walked all the way over to 265 Boulevard. And I told them people, please, and I begged them, let me in here one more time. This is the only place that I know to go. This is the only place that was going to keep me from dying. God knows I want to live. They let me in. I stayed 5 more days. And that counselor didn't have to tell me about that AA meeting on that Friday night, because when the members got there, I had all the chairs out and had the coffee making. I said to myself, doggone it, I'm going to get me a sponsor. Before I leave here tonight, somebody's going to be my sponsor. See, during those 11 months that I was around the program, I used to watch a little short, gray-headed man. I know he's chairing that big meeting up there. I know it. Tell him, John. I walked up to Johnny up that night and I said, John, I'm not going to ask you to be my sponsor. I'm not going to ask you. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you point blank. John F., you my sponsor. This program gets to me, people. I've come such a long ways, Jimmy. Let me skip what it's like now. I want to take you on a trip with me if you go. I want to take you back to 1982. Akron, Ohio, around the weekend of June the 10th. My sponsor, John F., told me I needed to go up there. So I went. Sarah down in the front row, she was there. A lot of people that I never met before, and they had some of the best speakers I ever heard up there. Some of the best meetings I've ever been to, but there was one part of that weekend that blew my mind, and that was when they put us on a tour bus. I sat down, this old man sat down next to me. He told me his name, and I told him. My name is Bill Buff. I'm from Atlanta. I asked him, where are you from? He said, I'm from right here in Akron. I said, this is peculiar. Hey, what are you doing on the tour bus if you live here in Akron? He said, when I woke up this morning, I knew I was going to meet somebody like you. They probably got questions to ask. And I said, I sure do. I got a bunch of them. He said, hold it a minute. Look, Bill. See that building over there? Can you recognize the old sign on the side of it? He's just a florist now, but that used to be a restaurant. And I focused my eyes, and I could see the print of a donut, and I could see the print of a coffee cup and 5 cents. He said, Bill, we used to sit up in there after the man put us out, talking about how great it was to be sober. And we went on around by that famous hospital. We went to the hospital first, and then we left there, and we went around by that hotel, and it looked like when we was going down the street, it looked like I could feel. Looked like I could feel the presence of Bill Wilson in that area. We left there and we went to this cemetery. Oh God. We walked down the hill till we got to this tombstone. And right in the middle it had the word Smith. Dr. Bob's grave. Now I want you all to picture 3 or 4 busloads of members of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous standing around this grave, and they're crying like babies. And I was crying, God knows I was, but it wasn't the same type tears that I used to cry when I'd walk in the house and my kids would be
looking at their favorite TV program, they find a reason to go to bed because they didn't want to be in the same room with their father. It wasn't the same tears when I laid up in a raggedy 51 Pontiac in Detroit, Michigan, half covered up with snow, and I'm saying, God, where did I go from here? They were different tears. They were tears that tell me that I don't have to go through that no more as long as I hang out with you. I don't have to do it no more. I still got to do the same thing today that John F. told me to do October the 13th, 1975, when I took my last drink. God knows I got to do it. What can I say about this poem? Is that words? No. Webster just didn't come up with the words to explain it. That's why it's so hard for me to get to that part. What it's like now. I can't explain. I think you feel it, don't you? I think you feel it. That's the only way to describe it. Ain't no words, you just feel it. God knows I love you.